Yes, I've been sent several questions about Lord Shiva, which I shall attempt to answer. Yata Shruta, Yata Mati, which means as much as I've heard and learned, and as much as I understand. Srila Jiva Goswami has stated that Guru Tattva and Shiva Tattva are both very difficult to understand. They are both considered one with Bhagavan, Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and different from Him. Of course, all jivas are considered one with Him and different from Him, but the Guru is especially identified with Krishna. Krishna Himself says, Acharyam Mam Vijaniyan. Acharyam Mam Vijaniyat, that should be. You should know very well that the Acharya is me, and also there are many statements in Shastra which speak of the identity of Vishnu with Shiva. So all living beings are in one sense equal with the Supreme Lord, but some more than others. All animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. So, so it's a difficult topic to understand. And I shall do so, as I say, to the best of my ability to reply to this. So, one question here is, why is Lord Shiva's form not worshipped? Actually, the questions, are these edited, these questions? I think not. No. Why is Lord Shiva's form not worshipped? Why is the Shiva Linga worshipped? Well, one answer to that is that the Shiva Linga is a form. It's not totally impersonal, but it's only part of the form. The question is that we see the deities of Lakshmi Narayana, Sita Ram, Radha Krishna, Ganesh, and Murugan, Skandha, and generally Devi, Parvati, Durga, Kali is worshipped in a form, in the form of the personality who she is, as well as many other minor gods, and well, especially goddesses. There are many minor goddesses spread throughout India, Gramya Devatas, who are considered to be expansions of Durga by some. So they appear in the form that with which to us appears human, somewhat, or sometimes mixed human with other characteristics also. But Shiva is worshipped in the well-known form of the Shiva Linga. If we think about it, they're probably more. This is probably the most worshipped form in all of India. Vishnu is overall probably more worshipped, but then Vishnu is worshipped in various different forms, such as Rama, Narasimha, Krishna, Varaha, Narayana. So probably the most worshipped form is the Shiva Linga, which is unique in not being what we would call a human-like form. So why is that? Then another question, Lord Shiva's worshipper goes to Mahesh Dham, and in a recent lecture you mentioned that Mahesh Dham will not be vanished at the time of annihilation, so Shiva's devotees will also be crossing then birth, death, old age, birth, death, disease, old age. Please put some light on this topic. I think this is not then another query is there that I had written in Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhava that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had installed Shiva Lingas at different places. Yes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur installed Shiva Lingas at the Jogpit. The birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also did at the Rudradweep Gauriya Math, the Gauriya Math that he established in the area of Navadweep Dham, which is called Rudradweep, Rudrapara, which is the place where Lord Shiva in Willem times, to use a Willem term, an archaic term that I used in Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, in ancient times from our perspective, where Lord Shiva performed sadhana and had darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's, if you go out of the Jogpit and turn left, and it's just close to the Ganga, practically in front of the Jogpit of. So the Rudradweep Gauriya Math is there, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established the Shiva Linga there. So why? Why did they do that when we are worshipping, we're enjoined to worship Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and give up all other varieties of worship. Yanti deva vrata devan, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. The worshippers of demigods go to the demigods. Hare Krishna. But madhyajino piyanti mam, those who worship me come to me. So why should we go to the planets of the demigods and not go to Krishna? So why at all should demigod worship be encouraged? Even that of Lord Shiva, it may be questioned. Lord Shiva is described as the greatest Vaishnava, Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu. He's described as the greatest Vaishnav, but he is generally considered as a demigod. Now, the various Vaishnav Sampradaya, first of all, why is he worshipped as a Shiva Linga? Yeah, that would be useful for me as I have to read various quotes. Why is he worshipped like this? And it's generally, well, the term linga, there are many meanings of that term. It can just mean something which is symbolic. So some people say that the linga is a symbol of Lord Shiva. The Shiva Purana itself equates this the linga as being symbolic of the infinity of Lord Shiva. There's a story, fairly well-known story among Shaivas, that Shiva demonstrated his superiority when Brahma and Vishnu were arguing among themselves as to who is superior. Brahma and Vishnu, Lord Shiva, he said, okay, Brahma, you go up and Vishnu, you go down and see if you can reach the end of me, who had in the form of a pillar, which neither of them could find the end of. So that's one story. But generally, I know myself when I first came to India and I asked about this because we'd never seen or practically heard of Shivalingas in the West at that time. Now the world is much more interconnected, but at that time when I came to ISKCON in the mid-1970s, even to get a picture of Krishna printed in India was considered something very special. There wasn't so much going up and down. There wasn't so much knowledge of India among our devotees or people in general. So when I came to India and I saw Shiva Lingas, I asked about that and I was told that, well, the Linga is the genital of Lord Vishnu, that's the, of Shiva. So that is the generally accepted understanding by people who want to understand. I suppose that most people who worship Shiva Lingas, they do so without any particular attempt to understand why. I would think so. What about, you're all from Hindu backgrounds? You're from a Lingayat background? Do they worship the, I suppose they worship the Shiva Linga also. Even though they don't, they say we're not Hindus. But they worship the Shiva Linga. So what's the explanation according to the Lingayats, which is a branch of Shaivas who are, they worship Basava, the founder of their cult. And you're also from a Lingayat background? No, you're supposed to be the expert now. Probably most of them don't know anything. They, like most Hindus or any followers of any particular religion, they don't really try to understand too much about what they're doing. They just do because there's no because.
They only speak about being Lingaikya.
Yeah, if at all they speak anything, then the idea is becoming one with the Linga. But they don't believe that you're born again either, right? So how does that work out philosophically? It's a bit of a strange mix, to say the least. But do they is the Linga seen as the genital of Lord Shiva? Is it considered like that? It's not spoken of at all. What about all of you from other various Hindu backgrounds? What do you? As being the genital of Lord Shiva. Anyone else? When Bhrigu went to test the three devatas to see who's supreme, then? Shiva was, well, that's not the story in the Bhagavatam, but then of course there are different stories. Lord Shiva was engaging in intercourse with Parvati, with all. When Bhrigu came, he was shocked to see that, and he said, "Only your genitals should be worshipped, and not anything else." Well, that is that may be in some Puranas or whatever, but it's not the Bhagavatam version. I'm getting round to that point. There are other explanations that it represents the pillar of light, which is representative of Lord Shiva or something. From what I can understand from the writings of our acharyas, especially Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the Linga and the Yoni is there also, which actually means Shiva and Parvati. So it is a representation or is the very form of Lord Shiva like that. Now, the British who, of course, some of them were fascinated by what is nowadays called Hinduism, but some of them took an, or the official stance was extremely negative about Vedic culture, because the British had a sense of superiority which they wanted to maintain. Everyone thinks they're the best, and the British thought they were the best, and as they were conquering various countries, it seemed like that at the time. So they wanted to assert their cultural superiority, that in all respects we're better. We're not just better at politicking and taking over countries, and but we're also culturally superior, which is also connected to their to the faith that some of them had in Christianity. So, they wanted to rubbish the Vedic culture. So when they, well, some people have the idea that the British invented the idea that this is Shiva Linga is worshipped with the genital of Lord Shiva, and that they strongly criticized this. So what is this, worshipping the genital? But it appears that it wasn't the British who invented this. Some people, notably Swami Vivekananda, strongly rejected the idea that it's worship of the genital. But it's difficult to avoid the word, the Hindu way of thought, there's nothing, it may be accepted as that, and what's wrong with it? Because Lord Shiva's intercourse with Shakti, Shiva Shakti, with his wife, there's nothing. See, the British had this idea that any form of sex, it's the British during the Victorian period especially, they've changed now, but they had this idea that any sex is something really horrible and bad, and it seems to be there in Christianity in general, especially in Catholic Christianity, and so that's also there in any religious system, that unrestricted sex or desire is something very bad, but in the case of Lord Krishna, it's worshipable. Krishna's dealings with his pastimes with his various consorts and girlfriends, which is not very easy for people to understand. And in the case of Lord Shiva, it's also glorious, because that he is the greatest Vaishnava, and that is his service in relation to the material world. We can say that Lord Shiva, he's non-different from Lord Vishnu, but he's different also in as much as he has a function to perform within the material world. There is a shloka in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Yoreshu Kaunteya Murtaya Sambhavanti Yaha Tasang Brahma Mahadyone Aham Bija Pradapita, in which Krishna says that I am the seed-giving father. I insert the seed within the yoni, within the yoni is sometimes translated as womb, and sometimes understood also to mean female genital. So Krishna says, I am the seed-giving father by which all living beings in this world are injected into this world. And the commentators, the Vaishnava commentators, say that actually this function is performed by Lord Shiva. So he is simultaneously Vishnu, in as much as he's injecting all living beings who into their various forms in the material world, via his sexual act with Shakti, his wife, But he's also somewhat different from Vishnu in as much as he has some direct relationship with this material world. So he's known as the greatest Vaishnava, and this is his service. This is one of his main services to Vishnu, that he takes this on behalf of Vishnu, he injects all the living beings into the various wombs via the mega womb of Shakti, his wife. Shakti, who's also known by various names as Devi, Amba, becomes Amma here in South India, and Parvati, and previously Sati, and so many names she has. At least 1,000 names are given in Lalita Sahasranama. So that is worshipable, that he does this. He is instrumental in facilitating our existence by which we have the opportunity to worship Krishna. If we were just stuck in the womb, in the Mahavishnu forever, then we wouldn't have the opportunity to come here at all. So he is worshipable for this, both by non-devotees who take their existence in this material world. When I say non-devotee, I mean non-Vaishnava, who take this opportunity for enjoyment within this material world, and worship, especially they worship the mother, Amba, Parvati, as the giver of material boons. And it's also worshipable by Vaishnavas for his service to Lord Vishnu. So there's no contradiction in a Vaishnava establishing Shiva Linga. And in fact, why is he in this form rather than why is he worshipped in this form rather than in his form as described in Shastra as being actually described as being white with matted locks and funny bhushan. He's decorated with snakes with hoods. That's also a name for Lord Vishnu, but generally given to Lord Shiva. He is Smashan Bhairava, inhabits the cremation grounds, and so on. So his form is described, but he's generally worshipped in this form by materialists for facilitating their birth within this material world. And also they like to emulate that. They're very much concerned with sex, which is the central point of enjoyment in this material world. Although most people, well, there are various grades of Shiva worshippers. Some are very low, the Preta, Bhuta, Ganang. They themselves, the Pretas and Bhutas, various forms of ghosts, are also worshipped by some people in this world. And there are also people who culturally are very high class, Brahmanas, who worship Lord Shiva. Most of them who worship him in this form do not do so with any erotic overtones. It's not that they become, that they're directly desiring sexual enjoyment or that they become sexually stimulated by doing so, but they worship Lord Shiva as Mahadev, the great god. And Vaishnavas, they also worship him in that form, as the linga, as that is his main service, and he is generally worshipped in its conventional form of worship in the world of him. Attitudes toward Lord Shiva and demigods in general, we find in the, among Vaishnavas, we find in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya, one of the reasons stated by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that one of the two principles that Lord Chaitanya took from the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya is that of exclusive devotion to Lord Vishnu. So they're so exclusive, they don't want to have anything to do with demigod worship in any shape or form or variety. They're completely against it. And according to Sri Vaishnavas, if you're outside a demigod temple and there's a tiger coming to attack you, even then you shouldn't go in the demigod temple to take shelter. Better you die than go in the demigod temple. They're so much against it. Whereas in the Madhva Sampradaya, they have a completely different approach, in which they Madhvacharya worships, he considers the demigods to be all very high level devotees who should be worshipped. And although they clearly understand, in Madhva Siddhanta, it's very clear, they make it very clear that Vishnu is supreme, but nevertheless, they worship demigods and they consider it proper to do so, seeing the demigods as various great Vaishnavas. And they say, well, it's established in Shastra, worship of these demigods, so it should be done. And for instance, at Subramaniam, there's that whole institution is run by Jains, but the worship of Shiva is done by Madhva Brahmanas, and they have no problem in doing that because it's a Vedic deity. They wanted to, they say, we'll arrange for the offering of food here, but it should be to a Vedic deity. Now, the problem with that is that people who are not fixed in Madhva Siddhanta, they will tend not to know the difference. And of course you may say, well, it's better that they worship demigods than worship ghosts or demons, as is described in the 17th chapter of Gita. People yajanti sattvika devan, that's considered to be in the mode of goodness comparatively to worship demigods. Then what's the next line? Raksha Yakshansi Rajasam, I can't remember exactly. Prita Bhuta Ganangs Chaiva. Then those in the mode of passion, they worship demons. And those in the mode of ignorance, they worship ghosts and spirit. Yajante Tamasarvita. So worship of demigods is, even with a material motive, not is better than even worship of Kali is within the Vedic culture, although that's not very high class. Even worship of ghosts and worship of ghosts and spirits is, you could say, at the edges of the Vedic culture, and that then it gets into borderline with Tantra, which rejects the Vedas. So where are we going here? But the Vaishnavas, they worship Yaksha Rakshansi. They worship the Yakshas and Rakshasas in the mode of passion, which Srila Prabhupada translates as they worship demons. So for Gauriya Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva has a very special position. In Vrindavan, he is... there are various forms, Kshetrapal, Gopishwar, Bhuteshwar, and he is considered the protector of the Dham, and he is also specifically the protector of the Rasalila. You can't get in there just by jumping in you have to be highly qualified to enter the Rasa Mandala. So he has a very special position, and the Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Sarasvati Thakur established his worship, Bhaktivinoda Thakur at the Yogapit, as the protector of the Dham. As in Vrindavan Dham, he is the protector of the Dham, so he is Kshetrapal, or in Bengali, Khetrapal, in Navadvip Dham. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur established his worship there at the Yogapit. He didn't establish his worship in other places. But specifically in that place. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established his worship at Rudrapara, specifically at the place where Lord Shiva was worshipping Lord Gauranga. So the great Vaishnavas, the highly elevated Vaishnavas, their worship of Lord Shiva is as a Vaishnava. But we, on the whole, they have not, in our sampradaya, that has not been highly encouraged. Well, we can say, especially by our own Srila Prabhupada, it hasn't been highly encouraged. And my understanding is that this is for the same reason that, or a similar reason that in the Sri Sampradaya, it's not, well, it's totally banned there. Although Lord Chaitanya, he would visit various demigod temples, and we may do also, but we're not encouraged to worship demigods because even Lord Shiva, because the tendency is, due to lack of understanding, to become more attached to him. We may become more attached to him or highly attached to him in not exactly the right way, petitioning him as a demigod without understanding his very intimate relationship with Lord Vishnu. Because in this world, he is generally perceived of as a demigod, as a deliverer, who people worship for getting boons from. So, we have to be very careful of that. And once we, once we start worshiping, well, then we have to worship Lord Shiva with Bilva Patra, bale leaves, and various mantras, which a Vaishnav may do in the mood of worshipping Lord Shiva as a Vaishnava, but there's actually no need to do so because by worship of Krishna everything is complete. Yatataro mula nishechanena tripyanti tatskandha pujopashaka pranapahora paharach cha yatendriyanam sa tataiva sarvahanam achyuteja. By worshipping Achyuta, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is taken care of, and in fact that's the best way to worship everyone else, just as supplying food to the stomach nourishes all the limbs of the body, and supplying water to the trunk of a tree nourishes all the rest of the tree. So that is all in one worship. By worshipping Krishna, everyone else who needs to be worshipped is worshipped. And it's actually the best way to worship others. Trying to worship others individually won't work. Just like trying to feed other parts of the body, then this supplying food directly to the ear, the eye, it won't work. So, to fail to recognize Lord Shiva as the protector of the Dham constitutes an offense. To fail to worship him establishing deities, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did, of Radha and Krishna, and Gauranga at Rudrapara, at Rudradweep. Rudrapara is the name of the village there, but the name that Bhaktivinoda Thakur ascribed to that area in his mystical vision of seeing the Dhamma of Navadvipa as Rudradweep. So to establish deities of Gauranga and Radha Krishna there, without establishing the deity of Lord Shiva, who is the devotee, who gives his very name to that area, and who worshipped Gauranga there. Without worshipping him there, without recognizing him as a great devotee there, that would constitute an offense. So it is necessary to worship Gauranga in those places by also worshipping Lord Shiva. But in other places it may not be so. Just for instance, if someone went to as a Vaishnava went to Mantralayam and they worshipped Krishna there, but they failed to worship Raghavendra Tirtha, that would be the offense of neglect, because that is the place where he performed his worship, and his worship is still the central point of worship in Mantralayam. So if you want to be a Vaishnava and you go to that place, and actually no one goes to that place unless they are a Vaishnava, well, they may go there for material boons also. That's also there. But to neglect him and just say, well, I'll just worship Vishnu without worshipping him, that would constitute the offense of neglect. So in the places which are particularly associated with Lord Shiva, one should worship him. So the question about Mahesh Dham, that is the abode of Lord Shiva, about which Srila Prabhupada has written. Yeah, in the purport to Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 28 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada writes, "The godly living beings who are all residents of the planets in the spiritual sky are eternal associates of God in different spiritual planets called Haridham and Mahesh Dham." In the purport to Brahma Samhita given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in the verse that describes the various dhams, Devi Dham, Mahesh Dham, Hari Dham. How does that verse begin? Say it louder, I can't hear. You remember the last two lines? Hari Dhamni. Yeah, what's the first line? We're all forgetting it. Okay, anyway, in the purport of that verse, oh, discussing these complex points, but we can't even remember a well-known verse. Haridhama Suteshu Teshu is the second. This mundane world called Devi Dham, consisting of the 14 worlds, viz. Satyaloka, etc. Next above Devi Dham is located Shiva Dham, one portion of which called Mahakala Dham. Remember at Ujjain is Mahakaleshwar, Lord Shiva there is known as Mahakaleshwar. Mahakal means great time. One portion of Shiva Dham, which is mentioned in Brahma Samhita as Mahesh Dham, is enveloped in darkness. interpenetrating this portion of Shiva Dham, there shines the Sadashiva Loka, full of great light. Above the same appears Haridham, or the transcendental Vaikuntha Loka. So in different places we have descriptions of Mahesh Dham being a spiritual planet, and in another place we have a description of it being just below the spiritual planet of Vaikuntha. So what can we understand from this? Well, just like Lord Shiva is Lord Vishnu and not Lord Vishnu, so Mahesh Dham is Vaikuntha, but not Vaikuntha also. It's some characteristics, but not others. Sadashiva eternally dwells in Vaikuntha and is the fountainhead of all the universal destroyers, known as Shiva. So Sadashiva dwells in Vaikuntha, the proto, we could say the prototype form of Lord Shiva. Another quotation. Quoting from the Vayu Purana, Mahadev's planet is outside of the seven layers of matter that cover the universe. It is eternal, blissful, real, and attainable by his devotees. Give me a pen. Yeah, just make a note of that. Okay. Then a quote from Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Unlike the ordinary Shiva, ordinary, that's well, it's maybe not exactly the best word, ordinary, because Shiva is always extraordinary. Anyway, conventional usage. Unlike the ordinary Shiva, Sadashiva is beyond Tamaguna. Then we have another statement from Baladev Vidyabhushan. Shiva Loka is Vaikuntha Dham. So, is Mahesh Dham in the spiritual world or not? There seems to be evidence for that. Here's a quotation from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 21, text 54. When a living entity is liberated from Devi Dham but does not know of the opulence of Hari Dham, he is placed in Mahesh Dham, which is between the other two Dhams. The liberated soul does not get an opportunity to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead there. Therefore, although this Mahesh Dham is Lord Shiva's Dham and above Devi Dham, it is not the spiritual world. The spiritual world begins with Hari Dham or Vaikuntha Loka. Then from Srila Prabhupada's writing on the light of the Bhagavat, verse 47, Mahesh Dham is the marginal place between Hari Dham and Devi Dham. The impersonalists who want to merge into the existence of the transcendence are placed within Mahesh Dham. So, Mahesh Dham has some characteristics of the spiritual world. Lord Shiva there worships. He's there as a devotee. I mean, he's in that position, he's not touched by, he doesn't have any contact with the Tamaguna, which he has contact with within this world. He's meditating on Lord Vishnu, and the impersonalists who get liberation from the material world, they go to the spiritual world. But they're not really situated in spiritual existence, because they're only partially spiritual. They haven't come to the full extent of spirituality, which is surrender to Krishna. So their position is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, yenye ravindaksha vimukta maninas trayasta bhavad avishuddha buddhaya aruhya kritshrena parang padang tatapatantyadho nadrita yushmadangra. Lord Brahma addresses Krishna. It says that persons who think themselves to be fully pure and liberated, and who actually become liberated by their very difficult endeavors, they go to the spiritual world, but they fall down again because of their neglect of worshipping Krishna's lotus feet. So they don't go to Vaikuntha. They may go to Mahesh Dham. Generally, we find that the impersonalists, they like to worship Lord Shiva, and they consider him supreme above Vishnu, which is actually an offense, although it's promoted in the Shiva Purana and in the Shaiva Agamas, which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur refers to as imaginary. Imaginary, at least in the sense we can say they're imaginary, in that their conclusion that Shiva is supreme is incorrect. So, for that offense they fall down. So they may go to Mahesh Dham, but Jiva Sarup Hoy Krishna Nityadas Mamai Vangsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. The eternal position of the Jiva is in the service of Krishna. So those who concentrate on Lord Shiva, thinking him supreme and eternal, they're not properly situated. And they may be elevated to his planet or to the Brahma Jyoti, but they have to fall down again from that position. So he's there eternally, and he may be, he has his associates also, certain associates, Shakti, Parvati. She's known in this world as Parvati. So she's also his eternal wife, and but they're clearly devotees of Lord Vishnu. There are other associates of him also. Nandi is his very famous associate, and there are others. So, presumably their service to their position as internal servant of Vishnu is in serving Sadashiv, who is Vishnu, in the form of a devotee, and they serve him in that role. Does that answer the question? But do others get free from birth, death, old age and disease only by worshipping Lord Shiva? Yes and no. If they only worship Lord Shiva and considering himself supreme, no, they may temporarily get respite from that by going to the Brahma Jyoti or to Mahesh Dham, but as that's not their eternal position, they have to fall down from that. They may do by, as people used to like to die, in Kashi Dham. And there they get liberated by the grace of Lord Shiva. But how that works is that when they, at the time of their death, Lord Shiva comes and sounds in the name of Lord Rama. And by hearing the name of Rama, they get liberation, because only Vishnu can give liberation, not... So Lord Shiva can give us liberation in that sense by making his devotees to hear the name of Lord Rama at the time of their passing away. Okay, Hare Krishna. I spoke about it according to what I know and what I've understood, although I definitely don't know everything. I definitely don't understand everything, especially about such topics which are very difficult for us conditioned souls to understand. Any questions about this?
In one of the purports, either Chaitanya Charitamrita or Srimad Bhagavatam, it is speaking about different kinds of lingas, Jyotirlinga, Vayulinga. Is it the yoni or the coming of different panchabhutas, the elements based on that? What is the explanation?
Yeah, that's exactly what you said. There are various lingas in various places there are five of them which correspond to the different elements. There's Akash Linga and all this. So that's exactly it. The whole topic of Shaivism is as vast as that of Vaishnavism. And if you studied your whole life, you wouldn't understand it all. Just like even to understand all the major philosophical points given by our acharyas in our sampradaya. I mean, most of our devotees, even those who are learned, haven't absorbed them all. For that, you'd have to study in depth the Shatshandarbhas. Actually, all the conclusions of the Shatshandarbha are given in Srila Prabhupada's books, but they're very systematically given with all references by Jiva Goswami, but hardly any Gaudiya Vaishnavas study them all. So even to understand the conclusions of our own sampradaya, what to speak of the culture and the various differing perspectives of various acharyas, and even to understand one important subject in some detail, for instance, Nama Tattva, it's a massive study. And what to speak of other Vaishnava sampradayas? We even, unless one takes the trouble to specifically study, we won't understand much about the other sampradayas and their teachings. And what to speak of Shaivism, within which there are many schools also. So, please don't ask me many detailed questions about Shaivopasana, because I'm pleading an excuse for ignorance. It's a massive culture. There's not been much study in the modern age. The academic scholars of the West, or the Western influenced ones in India, have studied in the way that they study various aspects of Vaishnavism, but as far as I know, there's not been much work done on Shaivism. Anything else? From the side of the Devis, and we may call them mothers, or at least in North India, they may be, used to be the culture. I don't know about now. To refer to, to women in general as Devi, which means, in either case, either we say mother, amma, or mata, ma, it means actually an expansion, a representative of Durga. That's the general understanding. Or Devi also means. So that may be in either those who are. That may be either considered worshipable or avoidable by the renunciants. Maya. So any questions from the side of the mothers or demigoddesses? whatever you want to call them, or representatives of illusion. No. Okay. Hare Krishna. We'll finish there. We could have finished by saying Om Namo Shivaya. But we didn't. We said Hare Krishna. Generally, Vaishnavas don't say Om Namo Shivaya. You can do. But if we start to, then others will take it the wrong way, probably. So, Hare Krishna.